WMAL News at 7. Good morning. I'm Heather Curtis. Nearly 160 people are still unaccounted for after Thursday's condo building collapse in Surfside, Florida. One woman says she's praying for a miracle in the hopes that her mother will be found alive. Another says she fears it's been too long since the building fell to find more survivors as the search continues today. So far, 4 people are confirmed dead. Florida Senator Rick Scott visited the site in Miami-Dade County.
Your just heart goes out. You can't imagine what these families are going through.
President Biden's deployed the resources of the federal government to help.
The president has spoken with Florida Governor Ron DeSantis as the search continues for survivors.
We've provided all the help that they have, they need. We sent the best people from FEMA down there. We're going to stay with them with the disaster declaration we made, provide for everything from housing to, God forbid, whether there's a need for a moratoria.
Speaking at the White House Friday, the president said his heart goes out to the people of Florida and to the families awaiting word. There's no word on whether the president plans to visit the scene in Surfside. At the White House, Rachel Sutherland, Fox News.
The former Minneapolis police officer convicted of the high-profile killing of George Floyd learns his fate.
Saying he was not basing his sentence on popular opinion or trying to send a message, Judge Peter Cahill sentenced Derek Chauvin to 22 and a half years in prison. Longer than the minimum, less than the maximum. 2 brothers and a nephew of George Floyd addressed the court to speak of the impact of his death. The mother of Derek Chauvin told the court that the defendant is not the racist or killer portrayed in the media, rather an honest, selfless man who dedicated his career to public service.
Fox's Mike Tobin. Meanwhile, some members of Floyd's family say Chauvin needs to spend more than 22 and a half years behind bars. A lawyer for Floyd's family is calling for the federal conviction for Chauvin in the hopes that it would lead to a longer sentence. Another sign that things are returning to normal. Animal shelters are filling up.
Remember back when people adopted pets for company during quarantine?
Things have sort of returned to normal pre-pandemic levels of intake and adoptions. And so we're all full at the inn, and so we need to get animals out and into homes as quickly as we can.
So Ashley Volm with Humane Rescue Alliance of D.C. says they've removed all adoption fees through this weekend, and
if folks aren't ready to adopt right now or aren't in a position to adopt, we also really need foster volunteers.
She says people are not merely returning the pets they adopted back in COVID times. John Matthews on WMAL and WMAL.com.
On this hot day, you probably aren't thinking about Christmas, but Wreaths Across America is. The nonprofit's getting ready to kick off its Giving in July campaign next week to raise money to put wreaths on grave sites at Arlington National Cemetery. Spokesperson Amber Karen.
You can do good twice. For a $15 donation through a local sponsorship group, you can place a wreath for an American hero in December and give back to that local program that is doing work now in their community.
Wreaths Across America gives $5 of each wreath donation to local charities. WMAL Sports, the Nats fell to the Marlins 11-2. Traffic and weather next. WMAL Traffic, here's Michelle Murray in the Hadid Carpet Cleaning Traffic Center.
In Rockville, you'll still find a portion of 355 north and southbound closed between East Middle Lane and Beers Mill Road due to a serious accident there. Follow police direction. And in the district, DC 295 southbound still closed at East Capitol Street due to an accident. Traffic is being detoured onto westbound East Capitol Street. Also, on the outer loop of the Beltway, after 66, there is paving work taking place along the right side of the roadway. Only the left lane squeezes by. Now from GarageDoorRepair.com, the WMAL Stormwatch 7 forecast.
Mostly cloudy skies on this Saturday. Also, plenty of humidity out there to start the day. Dew points back in the upper 60s to near 70, so you'll notice the mugginess out there. Highs today should reach the mid to possibly upper 80s under mostly cloudy skies with the chance for a few isolated showers, particularly 95 and points east. Later on tonight, partly cloudy, lows back in the 70s across the region for your Sunday. Hot and humid, high temperatures into the lower 90s. I'm 7 News meteorologist Alex Liggett in the Stormwatch 7 Weather Center.
I'm Heather Curtis on 105.9 FM, Washington's Mall, WMAL.
Now, the Saturday morning update. 105.9
FM, WMAL. It is the Saturday morning update on WMAL. It's hour 2. John Gizzi joins us each week. He is the White House correspondent and chief political columnist at Newsmax.com and Newsmax TV. John, good morning.
Good morning, Rick.
All right, you cover the White House beat. The president's infrastructure package, bipartisan discussions on Thursday, a press conference outside the West Wing, and it looked like they had a deal. Do we still have a deal? What is going on? Because I am totally confused when I heard the news on Friday.
It depends on what hour of the day it is to know whether they had a deal or not. As you pointed out, the bipartisan group of senators came out with the president on Thursday afternoon and announced a deal was struck. Essentially, it was a slimmed-down version of the infrastructure package the president wanted. It went from $2.3 trillion, the figure that the president initially offered, down to $1.2 trillion. Of that, $579 billion was on new projects, $109 billion on infrastructure, roads, and the traditional meaning of the word, another $66 billion on the refurbishing and resuscitation of the American railroad industry, and about $15 billion on the electric car technology. Now, all of that seemed good, especially when Republicans said they were going to keep their promise of no new taxes and no increasing current taxes. Within a matter of hours, in fact, following afternoon, after Newsmax reported on the deal in the morning, it appeared as though it was in jeopardy. Progressive Democrats in the House said they wanted the bigger package, $6 trillion, which is more than Joe Biden ever asked for, and of course is essentially their Green New Deal, something which could very much cripple American industry. In addition, there were talks that why do we need the Republicans anyway? We can pass this. But, of course, that's not the case. In the Senate, Senator Joe Manchin of West Virginia went along with the watered-down version. He would never accept what Democrats in the House are talking about. And, of course, then there's the idea that there would be a lot of non-germane things put in an infrastructure bill when left to the AOC wing of the party. There's a big question whether Joe Biden would sign any of that. In any event, the president appears to have the much-cherished deal that he wanted being fired upon and endangered by his own party. As Shakespeare said, he could be hoisted on his own petard.
You know, John, we all hear the importance of voting. And if you don't vote, look what happens. What might happen in Buffalo, New York?
Well, what looks like it's going to happen is the election of the first socialist mayor of a big city in America since 1960. In the Democratic primary, which is all important in the home of the bills, India Walton, former union representative, community organizer, and a self-described socialist, edged out the four-term mayor, Byron Brown, who has also served as Democratic state chairman of the Empire State. Now, coming in New York's second largest city, this is big news, but it should be noted, Ms. Walton got roughly 11,000 votes to the incumbent mayor's 9,000 votes. And again, it's in a heavily Democratic city that is very, very big at this point. What was her message? Well, where do we start? Replacing the city's official fleet of cars with electric vehicles. Keeping police from answering calls with mental health problems. And also slashing the budget of the police department to concentrate on, and I quote, the root causes of crime. That's just a start. And you throw in a moratorium on charter schools, which are popular in Buffalo, and you have the complete socialist agenda. I talked to Ralph Lorigo, who is the Erie County chairman of the smaller conservative party, and he believes that a write-in candidacy for Mayor Brown could save the city from a socialist mayor. We'll see in November. For now, it looks like Buffalo has swung to the left. Big time.
John, there's been a lot of speculation about the future of Republican icon Senator Chuck Grassley, whether he would run again in 2022. What's the latest?
Well, the latest on it is a poll showed that 64% of voters in the Hawkeye state say that Grassley should step down. He'll be 89 when he's next up for election. He's been in the House since 1974 and in the Senate since 1980. I might add that he's in very good shape. He was jogging every day to work until he got COVID and then resumed after. And sources close to him say that if his health holds up, he will run again. Now, this poll would normally be discouraging. It should be pointed out that Senator Grassley has only one primary challenger, a little-known state senator, and among Democrats, they are having a problem trying to recruit a well-known candidate. Again, I spoke to John Maxwell, who's been a strategist on all of his campaigns, and he predicted he will run again and win.
You had an interesting conversation with J. William Middendorf. Tell us who he is and what he said.
Okay, he's one of the true wise men of America during the Cold War. He was an investment banker. He was an early supporter of Barry Goldwater and Ronald Reagan for the Republican nomination for president. Served as Richard Nixon's Secretary of the Navy, and then went on to be ambassador to the Organization of American States and to the Netherlands under Ronald Reagan. In other words, he is one of the true elites in American foreign policy, and he's got a lot to say, too. In his new book, Winning the Next Cold War, which the ambassador elaborated on at a luncheon last week at the Heritage Foundation, he said the next Cold War will be different from the last. The enemies, he said, are Russia, China, North Korea, and Iran. The weaponry that they choose is going to be different from anything we've faced before. The next war will be one of cyberspace and germ warfare. And instead of lasting 5 years or even 20 years, it may last 20 minutes and take out more lives than it did in the past. He also said that dealing with Russia, trying to be nice, smile at them, doesn't work, nor does that work with any of the other countries. When Russia has 40% of its GDP devoted to defense, our $735 billion defense budget, the ambassador said, is just not enough. One more thing. As a pillar of the Republican Party for so many years, and someone close to presidents and presidential candidates, I asked, how does Donald Trump stand up to them? He replied, he may not do things to your liking or say things that you like, but he got rid of 53,000 regulations, Ambassador Middendorf said. He cut taxes. And he says he made our NATO allies pay a greater share of the NATO budget. In other words, he kept promises of just what he said he would do, including taming North Korea a little bit. How many presidents do that?
John Gizzi, White House correspondent, chief political columnist at Newsmax.com, Newsmax TV. You can follow him on Twitter at John Gizzi. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Rick. And onward and upward next week.
It is 7:16. It's the Saturday Morning Update on WMAL. Coming up next, we're going to join Jim Trusty once again. He was on with us earlier this morning, but so many things going on the legal front. And we're going to talk about the vice president's trip to the southern border. And a number of the pundits say that the strategy defies logic. And we'll get Jim's take on it next. But first, Michelle Murray is in the WMAL Traffic Center.
In the district, all lanes still blocked on DC 295 southbound at East Capitol Street due to an accident. Traffic right now is being detoured onto westbound East Capitol Street. Also in Rockville, a portion of 355 remains closed in both directions between Middle Lane and Veers Mill Road due to a collision. And this also has Veers Mill Road closed in both directions at Maryland 28. Also, watch out for the road work on the outer loop of the Beltway between 66 and Gallows Road. Along the right and center lanes, only the left lane squeezes by, causing delays. Now from GarageRepair.com, the WMAL Stormwatch 7 forecast.
Mostly cloudy skies on this Saturday. Also, plenty of humidity out there to start the day. Dew points back in the upper 60s to near 70, so you'll notice the mugginess out there. Highs today should reach the mid to possibly upper 80s under mostly cloudy skies with the chance for a few isolated showers, particularly 95 and points east. Later on tonight, partly cloudy, lows back in the 70s across the region for your Sunday, hot and humid, high temperatures into the lower 90s. I'm 7 News meteorologist Alex Liggett in the Stormwatch 7 Weather Center.
72 degrees in the nation's capital, 717, the Saturday morning update on WMAL.
It's great to be back in the DMV. The Dan Bongino Show, weekdays from noon to 3 on 105.9 FM, WMAL.
The Saturday morning update continues, and there are so many legal stories in the news this week. We've asked Jim Trusty to make a second appearance, a doubleheader for Jim here this morning on the Saturday morning update. Thanks again, Jim. And I want to ask you about the president's anti-crime strategy. Now, I watched his press conference. I listened to what he said. I didn't hear anything about prosecution. I didn't hear anything about the actual criminals who pull the triggers on the guns. I guess we can arrest the gun dealers, but I don't think the guns pull their own triggers.
Yeah, there's a couple of things that are just kind of feel-good, borderline bromides or myths that were involved in that strategy rollout. I mean, the first thing is there was this emphasis on community policing, and frankly, everyone supports community policing. It's like saying I'm in favor of sunshine and cool breezes. I mean, you're not going to get a whole lot of people that think it's a bad idea for the police to kind of intermingle and get to know the community. That does build some relationships that can be very valuable. Everyone's for it. It makes sense, but it's a little inconsistent for the same people that are demonstrably not showing support for police, you know, paying bail for violent protesters or blaming the police or suggesting that, you know, systemic racism essentially starts with a racist police department in every city. And then you look at things that have happened in Portland and some of the other major cities where there's been protests, and it's just outrageous. So community policing sounds like a good idea. I don't think anybody could possibly say it's a bad idea, but it's kind of like put your money where your mouth is. If you're not really supporting the police, if you're driving them out of the departments and telling them they're not particularly supported by the political figures, it's hard to take that seriously. The other part that was rolled out in this anti-crime strategy was this announcement of going after essentially mysterious gun traffickers, you know, these big gun traffickers that are to blame for violent crime. And I have to tell you, I actually think that's absolutely a myth. It's not that I'm, you know, in the NRA's pocket or something, but I live this at DOJ. We actually started up a group of prosecutors, federal and state prosecutors, that were determined to try to get gun trafficking cases that would affect Chicago. You know, these were Northwest Indiana, Chicago, that area. And it was looking for these situations where we could actually bring very comprehensive federal cases against the people that were supplying the guns that were being used in the horrific daily violence of Chicago. And as we went through this process of trying to build these cases and involve these different agencies, what we were finding was maybe a few straw purchase cases. You know, the girlfriend that goes into the gun shop, lies on the form and gets the gun for the boyfriend. But mostly guns are on a black market. They're in a totally different realm than what Joe Biden was talking about. They're stolen. They're traded for drugs. They're traded to other gangs because they have bodies on them, meaning they've been used in shootings. And so at the end of the day, when you talk about what's happening in Chicago every weekend, and it'll happen this weekend too, it's people shooting up playgrounds with guns that have nothing to do with the lawful transactions. They're not going to a Walmart. They're not going to a dealer, except in very rare circumstances. It's all traveling underground. And that's a tough nut for law enforcement to crack, but you're not going to crack it by announcing you're going after gun shows or legitimate federal firearm licensees.
Yeah, I can't see a gangbanger going up to get an arsenal at a gun show. You know, I don't see that happening. Was there anything in the administration's approach that would do anything to reinforce morale among law enforcement officers? Because we've heard the stories of how many are either going into retirement early or just flat out leaving the force.
Yeah, I don't know if there was anything in that announcement that really changes that tide right now. I mean, there's an extraordinarily high number of resignations and retirements taking place. And to me, it's a very simple cost-benefit analysis by each of these officers. They look around and they realize that they have no political backing, that the mayors of places like Seattle and Portland, Chicago, New York, have no interest in really defending the honor or respecting the hard work of these police departments. And there's large segments of the community that don't support them, or maybe worse, consider them the bad guys. So if you've been on a police department, let's say you're in Chicago, Detroit, wherever, and you've been on for 22 years, you're thinking to yourself, I'm eligible now. How much are the next few years worth to me? I mean, it's going to maybe nudge my retirement up a few bucks. It's just not worth it. Difficult jobs like that require political backing. They need mayors and councils and governors that actually support them. It doesn't mean blindly. It doesn't mean they tolerate bad police work, but give them at least enough political backup to make the job rewarding. And if you think the cops, if the cops are wrong at every instance, then they're going to leave and you're going to have a big brain drain, a big experience drain across the country at these major urban police departments.
You know, you mentioned maybe foregoing a few years of compensation, but it seems like more and more cases where a police officer is involved in a fatal shooting, whether defending themselves or defending someone else, and maybe there's an internal investigation, but now with the public pressure and national media covering virtually every police shooting of a minority, you're going to potentially end up with threats, with legal expenses. There could be a civil suit. I mean, there are a lot of things that are really changing in this dynamic if you use your weapon.
Yeah, I mean, it's a powerful incentive to either leave the department or not face serious criminal activity while you're there, because the emotionality is so high. You know, we've kind of ratcheted up the emotions when it comes to police shootings. There's a bit of a presumption in place now that if there's a minority victim, it had to have been inspired by racism. And I think that's unfortunate. I think we always have to be individualized in our approach, but I think police are fairly recognizing that if there's some basic dynamics in place, it's uphill for them to get out of it without great cost.
The vice president, after 93 days of not going to the border, went to the southern border. The geography was interesting, I found.
Yeah, she's about 800 miles away from the action. You know, I mean, El Paso certainly has its issues with Juarez on the other side, but it's not the hot spot for the illegal immigration that's going on right now. That's literally states away for most of this country, but 800 miles in Texas.
So the primary focus seems to be the root causes, which are encouraging people to come up from the Central American countries. But there doesn't seem to be any kind of an emphasis on the cartels that are doing the human trafficking or being well compensated for it, the drugs that are pouring in across the border. I don't think that has anything to do with root causes.
No, I mean, look, if you're really trying to make a difference, you would at least be holistic. You would at least say, look, we're going to go after root causes, whatever that exactly means, and we're going to stop crimes that are happening on the border as we speak. You know, I think root causes has become synonymous with just throwing money, and throwing money at Central America is not going to have some sort of macro effect on all the people that are fleeing north. We've really incentivized with this open border policy, with all these reversals, we've incentivized cartels and gangs profiting from human trafficking. And I guess what drives me nuts on this, Rick, is you hear women and girls that are being trafficked or smuggled into the U.S. are routinely being raped as a part of their passage into the U.S. And somehow, if you want to shut the border down and stop the cartels from profiting, you're the insensitive one. You're being cruel. And so I don't get how the narrative has gotten to that point, but we're in a very backwards world when we're supporting essentially the acts of cartels and gang members in getting people into this country illegally.
Jim Trusty, partner at IFRA Law here in Washington. Always appreciate getting your take on the stories of the day, Jim. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Have a good weekend.
And you too. And you can follow Jim on Twitter at Trusty Lawyer. 7:26, this is the Saturday Morning Update on WMAL. And coming up, we'll talk with Lieutenant Colonel Tony Schaefer. We want to get his read on the Biden crime strategy. You may have heard the president announcing his plans to fight crime in this country. Good luck with that. And also, we will talk about Vice President Harris's trip to the border yesterday. Another sort of missing the mark opportunity they don't take. But anyway, we'll talk about them all coming up. Stay with us on WMAL. KT McFarland's coming up too.
WMAL-FM, Woodbridge, Washington. America's reopening. Hear it here. 105.9 FM, WMAL. A Cumulus station. News now.
WMAL News at 7:30. Good morning. I'm Heather Curtis. The search continues today for any survivors of the condo building collapse in Surfside, Florida. 159 people are still unaccounted for. Another four found dead.
Crews have been using sonar equipment and dogs to assist in their search, even as thunderstorms have passed through the area. A fire has also been burning at the site since Thursday, hampering rescue efforts. Heavy machinery is also being used to carefully remove pieces of the building, which will allow first responders to search deeper into the rubble.
Andrew Scheinthal with Fox Miami affiliate WSVN. The long-awaited sentencing yesterday for the former Minneapolis police officer convicted of killing George Floyd.
I want to give my condolences to the Floyd family.
Former Minneapolis police officer Derek Chauvin sentenced to 22 and a half years for the killing of George Floyd, 10 years more than the presumptive sentencing guidelines, but less than many had wanted.
Including Floyd's family members, the family's attorney is calling for a federal conviction, which could mean a longer sentence. A judge reprimands federal prison officials who refuse to admit a local inmate needing mental health care to their facility. Great Falls resident Christopher Lapp later killed himself at the Alexandria Adult Detention Center while awaiting sentencing. The judge told people at the North Carolina facility he wasn't asking them to take Lapp, he was ordering them to. WMAL Sports, the Nats fell to the Marlins 11-2. Traffic and weather next. WMAL traffic, here's Michelle Murray in the Hadid Carpet Cleaning Traffic Center.
In Virginia, on the outer loop of the Beltway, between 66 and Arlington Boulevard, paving work along the right side, left lane gets by and traffic is slow. And on the outer loop at Braddock Road, there is construction also along the right side, left lane gets by, also watch for delays there. There is an accident on the BW Parkway southbound at US 50 with the right lane blocked. And on DC 295 southbound at East Capitol Street, all lanes remain blocked with the crash, traffic being detoured onto westbound East Capitol Street. Now from GarageDoorRepair.com, the WMAL Stormwatch 7 forecast.
Mostly cloudy to partly sunny on this Saturday. Warm and muggy. High temperatures today reaching the upper 80s, so right around normal. Been rather cool the past several days, so yes, it will feel more summer-like today. A few isolated showers possible, mainly the D.C. points east towards the Chesapeake Bay later on this afternoon. Tonight, mostly cloudy to partly cloudy. Lows back into the 70s as we head towards your Sunday. Expect hot, humid conditions, temperatures into the lower 90s. Chance for a few showers and storms in the mountains. I'm 7 News meteorologist Alex Liggett in the Stormwatch 7 Weather Center.
I'm Heather Curtis on 105.9 FM, Washington's Mall, WMAL.
Monday, we'll tell you what made Kamala cackle at the border, and we'll talk to Joe DeGeneva with Mercedes Schlapp, O'Connor & Company, 5 to 9 a.m. on WMAL.
7:36, Saturday morning update on WMAL. I'm Rick Fowler. We are joined by Lieutenant Colonel Tony Schaefer. He is the author of Operation Dark Heart, and he is the president of the London Center for Policy Research. Tony, good morning.
Hey, Rick, always great to join you. Thanks for having me.
So the president finally announcing an anti-crime program. And as I watched the president's speech and paid close attention, watched the whole thing, things that were missing to me in there were like prosecuting criminals. Really no mention of the criminals themselves, the people right. who actually are committing the crimes. Rather, the focus was in a different direction. What was your take?
So, yeah, we have a significant problem by the fact that you have people who are arrested over and over, time and time again. You know, most of the felons who get caught with guns, Rick, are felons who should never have had a gun, and they were back in the street because they either got a lax or no sentence of significance and allowed them to go back. And it's interesting. It's almost like they want these urban pressure cookers to exist for purposes of political gain, if you can call it that, because all these cities, Chicago, New York, Los Angeles, San Francisco, Washington, D.C., Philadelphia, these are all places where you have, for decades now, progressive leadership, Democrat leadership running these places. And they want to blame the gun. They want to go after dealers, gun dealers, federal gun dealers who basically sell guns to a second party who then gives it to a third party who commits the crime. Well, that's not the biggest source of guns. It's the biggest source of illegal guns are through theft, through break-ins, through taking all these things from different locations and moving it. And the things he's outlined, all focused on the firearm, will do nothing to curb any of this crime because it's not the gun. Many places where it have guns, many states have constitutional carry, and notable to that those locations, they don't have the crime rates the inner city does. So he does nothing to address the core issue of the culture of violence and lack, as you point out, lack of prosecution of violent criminals in those local jurisdictions. So this is going to have no significant impact. COVID helped expand the crime rate. No doubt people being locked down. And again, these are in urban places where these people were locked down. That also caused a spike. And of course, defund the police. And they're trying, the left is now trying to walk that back because of the damage it's done to a lot of their locations. But the bottom line is this Biden anti-crime bill will do nothing except in many cases pour fuel on the fire in the inner city.
I found it interesting that they were going to have community interveners. I guess those like community organizers, but these are community interveners who will go in to try and dial back the heat in the, you know, gang situations in the cities. But I'm not sure a community intervener is going to fare too well against rival gangs these days.
I was going to say, they'll be shot by both sides, so I don't think it's going to work.
I want to turn to the vice president's trip to the southern border yesterday. She went to El Paso, hundreds of miles away from where the real epicenter of the problem at the border is. And a fascinating headline at NPR that you pointed out to me. I think this is great. Here's how it reads at NPR, nationalpublicradio.org.
Yeah.
Harris visits the southern border after trying to keep the focus away from it. Very telling headline.
Yeah, and that's not Breitbart. That's not the Daily Caller. That's NPR. And I think that's where even her own side, and remember, you know, Rick, many of the border towns and leaders who run the towns are Democrats, and they're the ones who are suffering the failure of the policy the worst. And, you know, while I don't agree with many of the politics of the Democrats, I feel their pain. I mean, as a small municipality, you've got to protect your citizens, and if you're being overwhelmed, you can't do that. And I think it's and to point out, she didn't actually show up at any of the border places that are significantly a problem. She went to a border station in El Paso. El Paso is not the epicenter of the problem, but that's what she does, and that's what they're doing. And I think it's notable that the two policies which were the most effective in stopping this, to stop the hold in place asylum seekers, especially, you know, holding them in Mexico so they didn't get to the border, and of course returning to the catch and release program, which does nothing to curtail us. And those were policies which the Trump administration worked very well. And of course, she blames the Trump administration for the problems they've created. So a typical Democrat visit to, you know, this is pandering they're trying to pander to her base. Didn't seem to work, but clearly this was not a successful trip for her.
We've heard a lot about critical race theory in the schools,
yeah.
Also being taught in the military. General Mark Milley was in Capitol Hill testimony this week. The Republicans grilled him on what they call the woke critical race theory that's being taught. And General Milley fired back. What did you make of all of that?
So, yeah, let's just frame this in the proper order, because the left always says the conservatives don't understand critical race theory. Critical race theory is based on Marxist teaching. If you actually get down to it, it's a Marxist ideology that replaces class warfare with race warfare. That's what it is. And fundamentally, the belief is, the premise of the theory is, every institution is racist and every individual is a racist. That's the basic premise. So if you want to start from that perspective, Mark Milley then says he wants to understand white rage, which is actually a word within the context of critical race theory that presumes, Rick, this is, you know, by the way, I've known you a long time. I don't think you have white rage. I'm sure I don't. Mark Milley says he wants to understand it because he's white. So, you know, when you actually, you don't actually say you're studying something, you promote it by actually using some of the verbiage within it, that causes great concern. And the DOD had already gone through an operational stand down to quote unquote find extremists in the ranks, presumably looking for white supremacists. And that's what this is all about. And I think that's why Mark Milley was called out. As I think you know, I've met Mark several times. I think he ought to resign. I think this is disgraceful for a sitting general, let alone the chiefest, you know, the chairman of the Joint Chiefs, to parrot something that clearly is Marxist-based, since we spent the better part of the last century trying to defeat the Soviets and communism. So I do believe, Rick, this is a non-political issue, believe it or not. And this will affect readiness by the fact that, as Mark Milley did point out, the military is manned by individuals who come from, you know, the ranks of our citizens. And the citizens, I don't think, are buying the fact that the military now, to include the Navy CNO, the chief of Naval Operations, is pushing the idea that everybody is fundamentally racist, and we have to understand that. Because first off, Rick, I don't believe everybody's fundamentally racist. And I think just that premise causes problems.
I would think the military would want to be using materials in terms of instruction that would unite versus divide. But that makes too much sense, maybe. I don't know.
I came up to the military, and that's exactly what we had, the idea that we are all green in the Army.
Real quick, we don't have time to really dig into this, but the Pentagon UFO report finally came out. Okay.
Yeah.
And what they say is all those sightings of bizarre flying things over the years fall into several categories. It requires more study and remains largely unexplained and unidentified, but no pictures of little green men and no identification of actual aliens, at least in the report that they are putting out. Any thoughts on whether there really are extraterrestrials that are flying around?
All I can say is that there's ample evidence that things regarding UFOs cannot be explained. Those things which cannot be explained have to be examined, as the report says. Now, I still refer people back to 1947. There was ample indications that something happened in the desert in New Mexico. I think if people do a good degree of study on their own, they'll figure out what's going on. I think a lot of folks don't want to actually get everything out that the government has. I don't want to sound spooky about this, but the government's still not releasing everything we know. So.
And Tony Schaefer is the host of the Thought to Action podcast at LondonCenter.org. What you got on this week?
So we're going to be going through some China. We're going to do some China work. We're going to go through and review some of the things that China's doing, as well as Monica Crowley. Monica Crowley joins me for a brand new Thought to Action. As you know, she worked in the Treasury Department under the Trump administration. Monica and I do a breakdown of something called critical race theory. Imagine that.
Look forward to it. Lieutenant Colonel Tony Schaefer, LondonCenter.org. Thank you so much.
Hey, thanks, Rick.
You bet. 7:46, Saturday Morning Update, WMAL. KT McFarland coming up next. And what about that Wuhan virus and the origins? That's on the way. But first, Michelle Murray's in the WMAL Traffic Center.
On the Baltimore-Washington Parkway, southbound at US 50, an accident cleared from the right lane, but you will still find delays. DC 295 southbound at East Capitol Street still closed due to an accident, traffic being detoured onto westbound East Capitol Street. And in Rockville, 355 remains closed in both directions, between East Middle Lane and Beers Mill Road due to a longstanding accident, which also has Beers Mill Road closed in each direction at 1st Street. Also, watch out for a work zone on the outer loop after 66 along the right side. Left lane gets by. Watch for delays there. Now from GarageDoorRepair.com, the WMAL Stormwatch 7 forecast.
Mostly cloudy skies on this Saturday. Also, plenty of humidity out there to start the day. Dew points back in the upper 60s to near 70, so you'll notice the mugginess out there. Highs today should reach the mid to possibly upper 80s under mostly cloudy skies with the chance for a few isolated showers, particularly 95 and points east. Later on tonight, partly cloudy, lows back in the 70s across the region for your Sunday, hot and humid, high temperatures into the lower 90s. I'm 7 News meteorologist Alex Liggett in the Stormwatch 7 Weather Center.
73 degrees in the nation's capital at 7:48. 7:50, the Saturday morning update on WMAL. I'm Rick Fowler. It is an honor to be joined by KT McFarland. She is the author of Revolution, Trump, Washington, and We the People. She initiated the Trump administration's reassessment of a range of national security issues, beginning with North Korea and China. And she has held national security posts in the Nixon, Ford, and Reagan administrations, as well as the Trump administration. KT, good morning.
It's a pleasure. Thank you.
We are asking a lot of questions about the origins of COVID-19. We're hearing a lot of questions about the lab in Wuhan, funding for the lab, and the questions are just not seeming to be answered. I wanted to get your analysis sort of where it stands and how you see any potential investigations playing out. Who's doing what at this point, KT?
Well, there are two investigations going on. One is the U.S. government, the intelligence services, are doing their own assessment, and that's due probably now in about 60 days. But even the director of national intelligence, Avril Haines, said, you know, we could well never get to the bottom of this. Then there's another investigation, which the G7 called for, signed a communique saying that we want the World Health Organization, remember the guys who whitewashed the investigation the first time around, we want them now, this time, to conduct another investigation. This one is going to be transparent, and it's going to include China. Well, good luck with that. And when Jake Sullivan, the National Security Advisor, was asked last week, well, why do you think China's going to cooperate this time when they didn't last time? And he said, well, the world's watching, and they don't want to be isolated on the world stage. Come on, think about this. Think this one through. If the Chinese say, open up the lab, and let's say there was never anything to hide, which is their whole point, then why the heck did they not share the research 18 months ago, 2 years ago? If they had shared the research, if they had let people in at the time, we could have gotten ahead of the virus. We could have prevented its spread. I mean, they looked like they were guilty of something by doing the cover-up. But let's say there was something to hide. Well, they don't want anybody talking about that now, right? China's role in creating a potential pandemic. I mean, what the heck were they doing at that Wuhan lab with the Chinese military there? Why were they sort of amping up and creating these killer super strain viruses? The whole thing, the Chinese are never going to cooperate. Not to say you let them off the hook, but don't expect them to cooperate. But my concern on stuff that we can control is, was there another cover-up going on in Washington? And I think that nobody's investigating, but everybody should.
Well, tell us a little bit about that, because many, many questions have been asked of Dr. Anthony Fauci, and, you know, depending on the time period, whether it was a year ago or several months ago, his responses sometimes fluctuate. So help us understand where he is on all of this.
Well, I'm concerned that our initial handling of the pandemic was bungled, and it was because a handful of government scientists and bureaucrats and their unwitting media enablers, did they deliberately set us off in the wrong direction to cover up their own complicity in creating COVID-19? Look, the scientists and Fauci and others insisted that anybody who promoted that lab leak theory, including, you know, Governor DeSantis, including some of our leading governors and other scientists, very well-respected scientists, they were accused of being hysterical, xenophobic, anti-science, conspiracy theorists. Clearly, President Trump was called all those names when he talked about the lab leak theory. But I now have to look back, as we now find more and more evidence that it probably was a lab leak. Why did those people, the so-called experts with science on their side, why did they react with such velocity and venom? Were they covering up something that they had done, something they didn't want the world to know, so they were pointing everybody in a different direction? And that's that they were conducting risky, what's called gain-of-function research, which genetically engineers fairly harmless viruses to make them more contagious, more virulent, more lethal in order to study them. And we were, the U.S. government was giving grants to people to go study that. Now, some of the people, including Fauci, claimed, well, we weren't doing that kind of research in Wuhan. That's not what the money that we sent to Wuhan was for. But then I've got to ask, why were we sending money to Wuhan in the first place? You know, why, China's a rich country. They don't need our money. And so
would you trust the Chinese to spend the money exactly the way we expected them to?
Well, not because we had nobody there to oversee them. You know, and Fauci kept saying, well, as long as there's oversight, there's no risk. Well, we had no oversight. So, look, I was Trump's first deputy national security advisor. I knew nothing about these potentially dangerous gain-of-function research projects. Mm. And I knew nothing about the U.S. government funding the Chinese labs. And I can tell you, if I'd been briefed, President Trump had been briefed, we never would have agreed to it. First, can you just hear Trump now? Why are U.S. tax dollars being used to pay for research in China? Why aren't we supporting them? And then the second, he was elected to change China policy, not to subsidize it. And then Trump himself, he's a notorious germaphobe, he hates to even shake hands. He would have railed really loudly against paying what he would have called mad scientists to create Frankenstein monster viruses. So I want to know, because I certainly didn't give the go-ahead, President Trump certainly didn't give the go-ahead. Who gave the go-ahead for that gain-of-function research? The Obama administration shut it down, this gain-of-function research. They shut it down, but somehow, mysteriously, without, I think, anybody at the top's knowledge, the National Institute of Health Sciences suddenly restarted it in January of 2017, just as Trump was taking office. Were they trying to pull a fast one? You know, even Fauci himself, he said that when he was talking about gain-of-function research, he said, well, the benefits are so big that they would outweigh the risks of a lab leak theory. Well, you know, tell that to the world who's still recovering from a throes of a pandemic, which has caused more damage than a world war. I think that this whole thing needs a really thorough investigation. If we're investigating everything else, look and see what happened at home, because our scientists paying for risky research in a country that's our adversary, and then the worst happened and it leaked out, and then because they were worried that somebody would uncover their complicity in this, they then rush to call anybody who said lab leak theory, well, they're a xenophobe, and they turned everybody in the world in the other direction. And as a result of that, we lost months that we could have been preparing the world. We could have been looking at cures, at vaccines. We could have shut down borders. We could have prevented its spread. And was it all because a bunch of scientists wanted to cover up what they had done? Maybe, maybe not. But I don't think we should, again, make the mistake of saying, well, anybody who questions these people, these government bureaucrat scientists, is a xenophobe, is a fearmonger, conspiracy theorist. We need to know what happened, because if that's our government run amok, which is the concern of myself and a lot of conservatives, that we have this sort of government that's on autopilot, that no matter who's president, this government, if it is permanent, can't be fired, can't be switched, they're in charge, that this big government is doing what big government does, and when they've screwed up, big government covers up for itself.
Fascinating discussion. K.T. McFarland, author of Revolution, Trump, Washington, and We the People. K.T., as always, thank you so much.
Thank you, Rick.
7:58, and that's it for the Saturday Morning Update. Thank you very much for being with us this morning. Garden Sense will follow the 8 o'clock news here on WMAL.
WMAL-FM, Woodbridge, Washington. America's reopening. Hear it here. 105.9 FM, WMAL. A Cumulus station.